Since 1873, Publishers Weekly has been the house organ of the book trade. It prints publishing news, gossip, and advance capsule reviews of new books. So it greatly influences what bookstores order, what reviewers review, and what the rest of us read. Lately, critic Maureen Corrigan has been thinking about the power of Publishers Weekly.
Sometimes the lists in Publishers Weekly are more fascinating to read than the books themselves. One recent issue recommended The Amazing Legume, which is a cookbook filled with low-cholesterol bean recipes, the 7-volume collected works of Mary Wollstonecraft, Sam Snead's autobiography called My Life on the Golf Course, and Save the Birds, a nonfiction book by Walter Cronkite that argues that if the birds die, we all die. You may think that this is a diverse list, but it's deceptive. Publishing is a conservative industry, so the books Publishers Weekly highlight usually belong to surefire, money-making categories. Canonized authors almost always receive positive blurbs. Books about Nazis are hot, so are self-help manuals and celebrity biographies. Even back in 1931, Publishers Weekly was recommending My Father, Mark Twain by Clara Clemens, probably one of the first tell-all biographies by a celebrity child. If a book doesn't obviously belong to an established category, Publishers Weekly will sometimes try to fit it into one, so it will be more attractive to booksellers. My favorite example of this kind of imaginative reclassification is in a 1927 issue where a Publishers Weekly critic tried to hawk an odd book called The Future of an Illusion by referring to its author as the Sage of Vienna. This made Freud sound like just another self-help guru. By 1930, someone at Publishers Weekly must have read Freud because the magazine adopted a guilt tactic to market civilization and its discontents. Professor Dr. Sigmund Freud has written a new book. Those who have never read him, for one reason or another, no longer have an excuse not to do so. The new book, while brief, is packed with stimulating ideas. I'll say, ideas like the pathetic human quest for happiness, our instinctual hostility to culture, civilization and its discontents is Freud's grand summing up of a lifetime of thinking, yet Publishers Weekly felt compelled to apologize for it because it was short by industry standards. The back issues of Publishers Weekly also make an important contribution to the current great books debate. They give us a glimpse into the grimy commercial origins of the classics and demonstrate that their alleged superiority wasn't always immediately apparent. In the summer issue of 1879, William Thackeray's Henry Esmond was featured in the same advertisement with an anonymous and higher-priced novel called That Awful Vicar. F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Beautiful and the Damned was touted in March of 1922 as a bully job. But the blurbs in that issue were much more enthusiastic about a bestseller entitled Tomaine Street by Caroline Wells. Tomaine Street probably had a more familiar plot. This makes me suspicious about a new novel Publishers Weekly recently recommended called The Comfort of Madness. It's narrated by a paralyzed catatonic patient in a mental hospital and sounds like a cross between Whose Life Is It Anyway and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I wonder what books we're not seeing because they don't appeal to the well-worn tastes of Publishers Weekly and the industry it represents.
Maureen Corrigan teaches at Georgetown University.